It's time now for Super Psychologist, Dr. Mara Karpel, and your golden years.
Good evening and welcome to Dr. Mara Karpel and your golden years this evening and every Sunday evening at 5 p.m. Central Time. That's 6 p.m. Eastern Time right here on blogtalkradio.com and on drmarakarpel.com. And today is Sunday, May the 28th, Memorial Day weekend, and I hope you're all having a safe and enjoyable unofficial start to the summer. We are here live, broadcasting from Austin, Texas, where the weather has been extremely hot and humid, leading us today to have some big storms on the horizon. So be safe wherever you are if you're in a stormy area. And if we get cut off or if it gets a little choppy, then you'll know that that's the reason. The weather is one of the many things that we cannot control. All right, but hopefully we'll get through this without a glitch. And Art Mendoza of Accomplice Entertainment is doing his best to make the show run. He's the producer of this program, and he's here with us running the program. And we have another great show in store for you. In a few minutes, we'll be joined once again from Boston, Massachusetts, by longtime Boston Globe economics and finance reporter, former reporter for The Economist, and current researcher for the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College, Kimberly Blanton. And this time, Kim and I will have a discussion about the psychology of finance, or rather, the psychology of financial planning avoidance. And Kim will fill us in on the risks of avoiding planning for retirement and the financial benefits of overcoming this roadblock, even in middle age, even if you didn't start out planning when you were younger. And later in the program, jazz saxophonist Paul Klemperer will join us once again from here in Austin to talk about where he's been playing, where you can see him perform, and of course, we'll also be playing some of his music, and I think we have some new tunes from Paul today. And along the way, I will speak about the benefits of laughter and humor for healing pain and easing stress. And if this is the first time that you're tuning in, I'm a licensed psychologist from New York City, practicing here in New York, in Austin, Texas, and the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. And I work with adults of all ages and have a specialty of working with seniors and with caregivers. And for the past few years, have also been evaluating veterans for PTSD. And part of the time, my office is in the wonderful Veterans Resource Center, Heroes Night Out, which is located in Cedar Park, Texas. And for information about this really great resource for veterans and for veterans' families, you can check out their website, heroesnightout.com. Want to contact me? You have a question or something that you feel that I should know, send me an email to drmara@drmarakarpel.com, drmarakarpel.com, or give me a call at 512-626-6973. This evening's program is produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Cypha Productions, and sponsored by Dr. Ronald DeVere, neurologist, memory specialist, and author of the book, Memory Loss, Everything You Want to Know But Forget to Ask. To make an appointment with Dr. DeVere at his memory clinic in Lakeway, Texas, or to purchase a copy of his book, you can call him at 512-261-7909, or you can send an email to rdevere, R-D-E-V-E-R-E, at austin.rr.com, and his book is also available on Amazon. This evening's program is also sponsored by Storyhouse. Storyhouse gathers your stories and turns them into multimedia collections that can be shared now and for generations to come. Storyhouse Over to conduct a private interview in your home or invite them to your next big event or family reunion. Storyhouse, where your memories live. Find out more at yourstoryhouse.com or call 512-296-8752. So throughout this evening's program, we will have time to take your questions. So if you have any questions or comments for me or for my guests, please feel free to give a call. The toll-free number is 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. Or you can email or tweet your questions to me, and I will read them on the air to my guests. And my email address, again, is Dr. Mara, that's D-R-M-A-R-A, at drmarakarpel.com, D-R-M-A-R-A-K-A-R-P-E-L.com. And my Twitter address is M-A-R-A-E-K. And if you have questions for the guests, please be sure to call or email or tweet while they are still here on the program so that they can answer your questions. And you can hear this evening's program again by going to my website, drmarakarpel.com. And the link to the podcast will be posted later tonight along with all of the website links given by my guests on the program. And you can also hear the podcast as soon as 5 minutes after the show ends by going directly to Blog Talk Radio, that's blogtalkradio.com/yourgoldenyears. And for information from this show and previous programs, to listen to previous programs or find out about upcoming programs, read my blogs from thriveglobal.com and huffingtonpost.com, watch the videos of interviews, etc., or find out about my upcoming book, go to drmarakarpel.com, D-R-M-A-R-A-K-A-R-P-E-L.com. Or to listen to the programs, go to blogtalkradio.com/yourgoldenyears. And for all of the latest up-to-the-minute information, follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Karpel, Your Golden Years. Okay, so we're going to take a brief break, but don't go anywhere. After the break, researcher for the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College, Kimberly Blanton, will be joining us on the phone for a discussion about the psychology of financial planning avoidance and the benefits for overcoming this roadblock. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Super psychologist Dr. Mara Karpel will be back after words from our sponsors.
Worry about memory loss? Dr. Ronald DeVere, certified neurologist and director of Alzheimer's disease and memory disorders in Lakeway, has been helping those with dementia and memory loss for over 12 years, specializing in the diagnosis, treatment, and counseling of those with memory loss and dementia. Dr. DeVere also has a book to reduce your worry and fear by knowing the facts. Memory loss, everything you want to know but forget to ask, available now on Amazon.com. Dr. Ronald DeVere, Alzheimer's disease and memory disorders center in Lakeway, and his book, Memory Loss, everything you want to know but forget to ask. For more information or to schedule an appointment, call 512-261-7909.
Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. There are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-252-9240.
Please visit us on the web at www.drmarakarpel.com.
And we are back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel and your Golden Years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast with Dr. Mara Karpel. And now joining us once again from Boston, Massachusetts, researcher for the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College, Kimberly Blanton is joining us. Good evening, Kim.
Good evening, Mara. How are you doing?
Okay. I just want to remind you again, there's a slight delay when we talk like this.
Okay.
Welcome back to the program.
I always like to, as you know, I lived in Dallas for about 5 years, so I'm always happy to talk to Texas. I love Texas. It's the best time of year, too, to be there.
Yeah, although we're expecting some big storms right now, so hopefully we won't get cut off by a thunderstorm.
One thing I loved about Texas, actually, was the thunderstorms. They're great.
Oh,
they're wonderful.
Okay, yeah, we do have some big ones here. So Kim, for listeners who haven't heard you on this program before or haven't followed you on your blog, can you give them a little bit of information about your background?
Yeah, I would be happy to. As we'll talk about, I write a blog. It's a personal finance and retirement blog at the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. I'm actually not a researcher. I write about research.
Okay.
And I write about it all the time. So I'm kind of getting to the point where I'm starting to feel like I am a researcher, but I'm not. But I work with a lot of researchers at our research center. I write about the research that we do, as well as the research that people all over the country, academics all over the country are doing, and psychologists and all kinds of people. My background is actually as a journalist. I was a reporter, newspaper reporter for 30 years. In fact, I was at the Dallas Times Herald for about 4.5 years. And then I was at the Boston Globe. When I was in Dallas, I also wrote a lot of articles about Texas for The Economist magazine. And I left the Globe in 2008. And being a reporter is not exactly necessarily, it's a young person's game. It's a really stressful, you know, I know a lot of reporters are, everybody likes to hate reporters. It's a very hard job because you're spending a lot of time running down facts and trying to get people to tell you things they don't want to tell you, et cetera. So I decided to leave the Globe in 2008, and I've been at the center. I had one other job in between, but I've been at the center now for 6 years. I'm writing this blog week in and week out. It comes out twice a week. And the title is Squared Away, as in squaring away your finances. And then the subtitle is Financial Behavior, Work, Save, and Retire. So I try to write about literal retirement issues, but, you know, we all have 401ks now. And so you really have to start on retirement when you enter the workforce. After college or after high school. So kind of the blog is about retirement in a very broad way. I try to really go back even to what you can do when you're a lot younger to save for retirement, which makes it a lot easier, frankly. So if you start earlier.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, even though you're not the researcher, you know an awful lot about the research findings in retirement. And so in the research that you write about, what have you found about how educated people generally, how much they know regarding what they need to do in order to be prepared for retirement?
Well, I think that I don't even know if education is really the dividing line. What is really just quite remarkable, Dr. Carpell, is that, you know, the vast majority of Americans are, well, I'll give you some quick statistics that have come out of various surveys that people have done. 75%, 3 out of 4 people is stressed about money. The main reasons are not enough saving, often it's retirement, and too much debt. So this is just a concern across the board. Another survey I've written about, 81% of Americans don't know how much money they'll need in retirement. We can talk more about that later. But, you know, not knowing how much you need can conceivably be tied in with the fact that you're stressed about it in the first place. More than 70% of accountants say that their clients are worried about running out of money in retirement. So if you don't know how much you need, you're of course going to worry about if you don't know how much you need, you're going to worry about running out. And you're also just going to worry, am I saving enough? So these things are all wrapped up together. And So I think I almost feel when I write this blog, when I see these really huge numbers of people who are worried about this stuff, that we're all sitting around worrying about it. And not necessarily always doing something about it, but it is very much on our minds, I guess, whether we want to, you know, really think about it or not. So that's kind of my general feeling, you know, my general sense from just writing about this a lot.
So, you know, typically what I see is that when, and certainly I've experienced this myself, but I see it also, you know, as a psychologist with my clients, when people worry about something, they tend to try to avoid it. Very few people actually tackle the problem that they're worried about. They tend to run away from it and try not to think about it. So,
why is that?
Well, I think because it's too uncomfortable, and most people, we have a tendency to catastrophize. So we think that if it's if we're not taking care of this problem, if we haven't taken care of it sooner, it's too late now to take care of it, and we're worried that, you know, we're really, really, really in bad shape and there's nothing we can do about it. So rather than deal with the difficult difficult emotions related to that, we try to push it away and, you know, get involved in getting on social media or watching television or, you know, doing whatever we can to distract ourselves, just like we distract ourselves from anything else that's uncomfortable in our lives. That's my take on it.
Yeah, and we all do that. I mean, I've certainly done that. I don't do it so much with money anymore just because I write about it and I'm always thinking about it. But I think this idea of not being able to, feeling like there's nothing you can do, must be the close cousin of not taking action, right? The idea is you can't get to the point of figuring out what you're going to do, then you're never going to take the action that you might be able to do. There's like a wall between it. And you can't figure out, what am I going to do about this? You don't even go there, kind of, and take that step to make something happen.
Well, I think a lot of times people feel like there's nothing they can do. It's already too late. Or if there is something that they can do, it's extremely difficult and it's not going to be fun and it's going to take away from their enjoyment that they're going to have to give up a lot in their life in order to be able to save for the future.
Well, you know, that's interesting because, I mean, I think you have to think about this in terms of different ages of you know, people you're talking about, because if you're really young, you know, if you're in terms of retirement, if you're really young and you're just starting to work, if you start saving right away, you can save relatively painlessly. You know, you can save small amounts, have the money taken out of your check. You never see it. It goes in your 401k. And, you know, you can get away with saving like maybe 10% of your check or something. When you get older, I'm a baby boomer. When you get older, if you all of a sudden have a wake up and say, I need to save for retirement, you haven't been saving all along, or you feel like you haven't been saving enough. The older you get, it gets, you know, you get to this point where you've got to save much higher percentages of your pay to get into like whatever considered perfect shape, right? Now, if your mortgage is paid off, you may be able to, you know, if your mortgage is paid off and you're sitting on a house, you know, you've got home equity, you might be able to actually be able to save like a really high percentage of your pay, like, you know, 20% or 25% or something. But if you're not, you know, I think people go, I'm supposed to have money in my 401k. I don't. That's the only thing I can do. So I don't want, you know, you get back into the not thinking about it and not wanting to deal with it, when in fact there are other things that you can do about it as well. But you and I have never talked about this, but I have talked to other psychologists about, you know, this whole issue of why, you know, why we avoid money. And, you know, I think that one of the things that seems to happen is, at least, hold on, I'm trying to find this blog. I got a bunch of blogs out here I'm looking for, but, you know, sometimes people, at least the financial psychologist, this is what he does, is he actually thinks about the psychology of money. And he said that, you know, sometimes people feel almost like they're doing something wrong, you know, that they're kind of, they've been lazy or they've been stupid, and they feel almost ashamed that they're stuck, right? And so he said the feeling is, if I'm such a terrible person, why should I even try? Now, I'm over exaggerating it. It's only saving retirement. It's not like something really terrible, you know. But sort of he was trying to dramatize the idea is, I'm not going to ask anybody for help. Why should I even try? I've messed up. So that I thought that was kind of interesting as well.
Go on.
No, you go.
Well, you know, a few weeks ago I had on the show a financial advisor, and I had hired her to be my financial advisor because she had previously been on the show, and I decided it was time for me to take control. And so we talked a little bit about one of the issues that I personally felt, and I think that a lot of people feel, and she works with women in particular, and she runs into this a lot with women, is that feeling of shame is even it's even more a feeling of shame when you have to share it with another, with an expert, that you have to tell them all the terrible things that you've done to squander away your money. In your own mind, that's what you're thinking.
Yeah, that is so interesting. I never really even thought about that. Well, listen, I can tell the people who are listening, first of all, you know, retirement, it is, at least from the outside, it doesn't have to be, but it appears to be complicated. It's a complicated issue. And I promise you that, like I told you before, you know, 75% of people are stressed about money. 81% of people, they don't know how much they're supposed to be saving. I mean, you know, this is a very common problem, and the reason it's a bigger problem, even a bigger problem, is that's the system we've got now. We've got a 401k system. You know, you put your money into Social Security, but we're all responsible for our retirement now. That is the implicit in the 401k system, unless you're lucky enough to be in a union and have a pension, and not many people do anymore. So. So you've got, you know, on the one hand, the system demands that we understand the stuff and deal with it and grapple with it. And then you've got people who are feeling bad that they don't. And, you know, I can tell you it's not that complicated. In fact, in my blog, I spend a lot of time trying to just say, ignore a lot of the complicated stuff people are telling you. There's a few things you need to do. You need to save your money, put your money in index funds so your fees are really low, and maybe work a little bit longer. I mean, you know, that's kind of what it comes down to. is a few pretty simple things if you follow them, and then start saving early if you can. But how do people get across the divide to take action, Dr. Karpel? That's your department. I don't know. and in fact, one time I wrote a blog where I interviewed someone. And, you know, he said that the kinds of people who seek out financial advice are actually often the kinds of people who don't really need it, right? The people who seek it out, they've already kind of got their act together. They've got enough money. They may want to make sure, do I need a little more money? You know, they're like kind of fixing things around the edges. The trick is to find the people who really need the help. Why is it so hard for people to get over that hump?
Well, I'll tell you that I really needed the help, and I got the help. I mean, I think I had because I run my own business, and when I went to graduate school to be a psychologist, which is really a business, right? Unless you work for a company, most psychologists have their own business. They teach us absolutely nothing about business. Mm-hmm. Absolutely nothing. We didn't even spend 1 minute in my entire time in graduate school on how to run a business. And in fact, most people in my field have a hard time talking about their business as a business with their clients, because they feel mm-hmm. that it affects their relationship, the therapeutic relationship, and so there's a lot of fear about talking about money. And so, like, when I first started my business, I lost a lot of money because of that, because I wasn't mm-hmm. running it like a business. And so, and I never, you know, I got better because I learned from mistakes. I thought I had been burned, but I never was really good at it and organizing it, be sure that I had enough money to cover the overhead and then putting enough money away. But I think what got me over that roadblock was that I had started thinking about it, and I had started spending more time on my business and how to make it a little bit more efficient and how to save more money and for my retirement and that sort of thing. But it took me till, you know, I'm turning 55, so it wasn't, you know, I could have done it a lot earlier. And that's
I think sometimes when you start to tackle something, it sort of demystifies it a little bit. It makes it a little bit more real and less scary. Because I think sometimes
right.
we just have these like monsters in our head, right?
mm-hmm.
And then when you start dealing with it, you go, oh, well, that's not such a big, you know, oh, that wasn't so bad.
right. I think it's, you know, you start looking at it and saying, hey, you know, I have to take care of this. And you start making a little bit of progress, and then you realize, hey, I could really use the expert advice from somebody who really knows this is what they do, you know?
Yes.
So, you know, I'm not going to cut my own hair. I go to somebody who studied hairdressing.
Right, and you're not embarrassed that you don't know how to cut hair when you go to the hairdresser.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but somehow we're embarrassed if we don't, you know, if we didn't know how to deal with money. And I think money is very emotional for a lot of people. So it feels like, you know, if somebody even comments about, well, you might not want to do it that way, the way you've been doing it for the last however many years, you might feel like it's a personal affront.
Yep.
Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, that you've been doing something.
Or that it could cause a lot of turmoil in your life if they want you to do it this way, and you become so set in the way that you want to do it. You know, the other thing, too, I talked to another financial psychologist, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can also blame our parents a little bit on this, too, while we're blaming them about everything else, but you know, a lot of families don't talk about money. So some of this, you know, reluctance to deal with this, for people's reluctance to deal with this, has roots in just like any other psychological thing, you know, issue. You know, it starts from when you're really young, maybe financial conversations were stressful or they weren't talked about at all. And so there can be like sort of a negative vibe there about money
mm-hmm.
as well, because it's not at all unusual for a family to be stressed about money. I mean, that's,
mm-hmm.
you know, probably one of the biggest stresses in everybody's lives.
Absolutely.
And so even if they're not talking about it, we're all feeling it. We all, you know, everybody in the family knows, you know, can we go on the vacation, or we don't have enough money for groceries this week, or whatever form those money fears take.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of just kind of to buttress your point, it is very emotional. And I also think it's emotional thinking about the future and being afraid, you know, getting older, am I going to be able to retire?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't, you know, that's scary. I mean, not to mention getting older is scary anyway, but then worrying about, am I going to have money? Again, it's getting people over that hump and getting them to go in and talk to somebody and try to break it down a little bit into some things that could be helpful, as opposed to not going in and feeling embarrassed and not doing anything about it.
So I know the last time you were on, you mentioned that you had gone to a financial advisor. How was that experience for you?
Yes, I absolutely went. You know, I mean, I'm not a researcher, but I've become somewhat of an expert in this stuff, and I know probably more than the regular person, only because this is what I've been doing. I was a financial economics reporter before I started writing this blog, but I have to say, I did not write a personal finance on personal finance topics when I was at the Dallas Times Herald and the Boston Globe. I wrote about the economy. I wrote sort of the financial industry, you know, the banks failing in Texas. I covered some of that stuff. So I wasn't dealing with the personal financial issues. And I spent a lot of my life not saving for retirement, not thinking about it, not dealing with it. You know, coming to the blog, I'm just forced to think about it all the time. At first, I thought about it a lot in the abstract, and now a lot of times when I'm writing a column, I'm also thinking at the same time, how does this apply to me? I went to the financial advisor, you know, with some fairly sophisticated questions, but also some really simple ones. And two of the questions that we asked, I think I told you I got married very late in life. My husband was my husband's second marriage. But, you know, he is at the point where he's been teaching in the inner city for years. He's pretty tired, thinking about retiring. So I went with her to her with two really simple questions. Can he afford to retire? He's older than me. He's in his mid-60s. Can he afford to retire next year, and have we saved enough? You know, so those are really basic questions. And even I wanted some input from someone else. Even though I thought about it, I didn't totally trust myself. I wanted to see what somebody else from the outside said, because my husband and I, we can sit in our little marriage bubble and, you know, think whatever we want to think. I wanted to throw it against the wall and see what an expert thought. I have to say I didn't have a lot of anxiety about seeing her, but I think it's only because I've been writing about it for more than 5 years. But I can tell you, before I started writing this column, I probably wouldn't have wanted to see someone either. I was probably pretty uncomfortable with the topic as well. I knew I wasn't saving enough money, and it's tough. And our retirement system really forces us into this situation because, as I said, it's a system where you're very much relying on yourself to make it work.
Right. Right.
So.
So, you know, the financial advisor that I've been working with, it's over a period of time because she also does like financial coaching. And I felt like I needed to deal with the here and now in addition to dealing with the future, which I think, you know, of course, one impacts the other, because if you go into debt, like you mentioned, you're not going to be able to save for retirement. You're going to be paying off your debt. So,
right.
I was trying to prevent that from happening. And, within a short period of time, I got over that, you know, that anxiety. And I would say that I actually started to enjoy it because I started to think about my business from, you know, a more creative way, you know, as if maybe I had been a business student and started thinking, well, okay, so my overhead is too much over here and I'm not really using some of the things that I'm paying for. Maybe in the past I did, and my needs have changed as I've reinvented myself so many times, and I started cutting things out that I didn't need anymore. And it was actually kind of fun to say, hey, I don't need that anymore, and look how much money I'm saving.
And I also think it's, you know, if you can get past the hump and you can kind of take some action, you know, it's fun to take control of your life, or it may be a relief when you're looking at from the other side. Maybe relief is a better word, that, you know, yes, I can control this to some extent and I can do something about it. You know, the other thing too, Mara, is I think people really need to realize and maybe be careful about, you want to go to financial advisor, but when you go, you don't want to spend a ton of money on them. Maybe,
right.
So you know, when you go, don't go in with this open-ended relationship that can end up costing you a lot of money. Say, I'd like to have 3 sessions with you over 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, define what you're going to talk about. One is, how do I get my debt under control? The next one is, I'm dealing with this debt, but I got to start worrying about retirement. Help me. What can I do about that? And, you know, one other thing. I mean, you know, and tell the
right.
financial planner up front, you know, I can't, you know, now some of your clients may be able to afford it and they just don't do it. And if they can, they can do a more open-ended relationship, fine. But if people are a little worried, I'll tell you what, I had to talk my husband into seeing the financial advisor. Well, I don't want to pay that money. You know, we can do this, blah, blah, blah. And I told him before we did it, I said, you know, to not pay a financial advisor, and we asked her to do one analysis for her. We met with her a couple times. Those were kind of the fundamental questions with some related questions around them. But I told them up front, I said, you know, you're being really, what's the old-fashioned saying, penny wise and pound foolish, because,
right.
you know, saving a few pennies now is, it's not going to be worth it if you're really going to be able to get some help that can get you in a
mm-hmm.
new direction that's going to start solving some of your problems. So,
right.
you know, but you also, you know, again, set some parameters, tell the financial advisors, here's what I'm trying to solve. How many meetings should we have? If they say 5 and you're like, I don't want to do 5, come back to them and say, I want to do 2. I want to do 3. You know, that's all I can do right now. Maybe I can do more later. So be sure, if you don't feel like you have the financial resources to spend a ton of money, you know, think about your questions ahead of time a little bit if you can. If not, they'll help you figure them out. It's better, but the parameters that you set are the questions you think you want to know ahead of time can help make that process a little easier and make you feel like you're going into that process knowing what you want to find out, right? I'm an old reporter, right? Every time
mm-hmm.
I called somebody for an interview, I knew exactly what I wanted to find out from them, right? When I called our financial advisor, her name's Wendy, I knew I wanted Wendy to tell us. We wanted Wendy to tell us, can my husband retire next year, and have we saved enough? Those were kind of our 2 big questions. And
right.
you know, we got the answers. We got some answers. So I think people, they'll go into it and it's like they start thinking, oh, all this stuff is going on. But remember those couple, 3 questions that you know you want answered, and you'll feel like you have a little more control over the whole interaction
right.
as well.
Well, I think a big part of that is going to somebody who you trust, who's been recommended
mm-hmm.
to you, right? And who you
mm-hmm.
know that if you say to them, look, I don't have a lot of money to spend, I can't meet with you that many times, who they can kind of figure out how to make it less expensive for you, you know? Like
yeah.
tell you, okay, this is what you need to do on your own, and
mm-hmm.
then come back in, you know, come back in a month after you have figured all of that out.
Yep.
And we'll look
yep.
over what you've done. I mean, that's part of the way that I save money is I do a lot of homework. I do a lot of, you know, she gives me homework assignments. I do a lot of
mm-hmm.
the figuring out myself, so I don't have to pay her time, just like I
right.
do with my CPA. I don't send my accountant just raw numbers. I actually sit and figure out, you know, all the arithmetic before
yep.
I send
yep.
it to him.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what we did was our financial advisor, we got, you know, we actually, she just did it this year, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
And it's the first time I've ever done it. I've been writing this blog for 5 years. I finally did it. But we gave her our bank account info, our credit card info. You know, you have to get over sharing your financial information. But sharing your financial information with the financial planner is very similar to sharing your blood with the doctor so he can figure out
right.
if you have anything wrong with you. I mean, it's very, very private, and financial advisors really don't talk to other people. Psychologists and psychiatrists don't talk to their other people
right.
about their clients. It's the same. It's kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other thing I want to say about the woman who, Wendy, who we hired, that she, you know, she, I talked to her a couple times through my blog, you know, I kind of knew her and I liked her. I think that was part of the reason we thought she'd be a good one to hire. But before she ever knew I was going to hire her, more than once she has told me she wants to help people. You know,
uh-huh.
That's her job, is to help people. And so in terms of the motivation, you know, it's a good, it's that's what you want. You want to find somebody who wants to help people. And I think people who are in the financial advisor business, you know, like psychologists, there are a lot of them out there who are there because they want to help people.
Right.
Money is a huge, huge part of our life. It is a huge source of stress. And they want to help you cut through some of that and make your life better. So,
And sometimes it's just really simple things that they can tell you that make a huge difference. And it doesn't take a lot of their time and it doesn't take a lot of money because of that, you know, because you pay for their time, where they just tell you some information that you may never knew, you may never have known, that can make a huge, huge difference.
Right, and may have been, you know, when it's a financial thing, you may have just been spinning your wheels and spinning your wheels and that, you know, or just going around and around, and then they say, oh, this is an easy one to solve, right?
Right, exactly.
So.
Or they ask the questions that get you thinking. I mean, I found that as well, that she asked me some questions that I had never really thought about. And so on my own, I tackled those questions, and it started getting things moving, and I started making decisions on my own about things that I needed to change, and then came back and said, oh, I sent an email. Oh, guess what? I did this, and I did this. And she was like, wow, that's great. These were things that we hadn't even discussed. It was because of the questions she asked me.
Yeah, and she was happy that you were making progress.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just like I would be happy with, you know, my clients when I see them making progress on their own.
Mm-hmm. You know, if anybody is thinking about, I was trying to think some things to make you feel a little more confident going into the situation. One is to know kind of the parameters, how much money and time you want to spend on this, how much money you want to spend and how much you want to spend of your own time rather than paying them. And I think that is really important. Having the questions when you go in are really important. Another thing I think honestly is very important is if you get a financial advisor and all they want to talk about is your investment and you don't really have that much money, you might not be with the right person because I feel like the investment side of things is not – and now I do know a fair amount about this stuff, and I've kind of boil it down for myself what I need to know for myself personally and for my readers. If somebody wants to talk a lot about investing, that's not the kind of person you want. You know, you want, you know, I would like a financial advisor who says, I don't know if your readers know what an index fund is, but an index fund basically says, I'm going to pick a stock market index like this. Dow Jones Industrial Index or the Standard & Poor's 500 Stock Index. I'm going to put it in an index fund that tracks an index. That's all I want to talk about. That I'm done with my investments, right? That's it.
Uh-huh.
Those are like really low-fee investments, okay?
Right.
What you want to talk about is, am I saving enough? How do I tackle this debt so I can save? I've got home equity. What can that do for me? You know, that's money in the bank. It's just stuck in the
right.
walls and the floors and the kitchen cabinets, but it's money that you can use. So, you know, don't get stuck on the investment thing. Figure out the you know, you can certainly get some, you know, advice on what to do with your money, but, you know, and again, put the money in low fee index funds. And if somebody tries to tell you something else, they're probably not telling you the right thing unless you've got a lot of money.
That brings up another question. I mean, some people call themselves financial advisors, but they actually work for a company, an investment company,
mm-hmm.
and they make
mm-hmm.
money by you investing in that through them.
Right, right, that's right. So if somebody wants you to, if they're getting all hung up on the investment side of things, so what happens is, in fact, a friend of mine, she's got She's very, very intelligent. She's got graduate degrees. She bought an annuity, and I said, well, you know, I hope that was the right thing for you. And I said, well, how much did the annuity cost you? And she said, oh, or did you, or how much did you pay your financial? So an annuity is you invest money, and then you're going to get a payout every month from that annuity. So if you live to be 125, you're still going to get those payments. If you die tomorrow, the insurance company lucks out. They've got your money. They don't have to give any payments. That's what an annuity is. But anyway,
right.
I said to her, how much did you pay your financial advisor for that annuity? And she said, oh, I didn't pay her anything for that. And what I realized is, and this happens a lot, is that some financial people are getting paid to invest your money. They're getting paid by Merrill Lynch to get you
right.
to put your money into Merrill Lynch investments. Or they're getting paid by, I'm just picking on some banks, getting paid by Citibank to talk you
right.
into putting your money in Citibank. Or they're getting paid by Prudential or insurance company, whatever, to get you to put your money with them. So, and they're getting a fee from the financial firm. You know, the red alarms go off for me. This is not about Kim. This is about the financial advisor getting fees and about the financial company getting your money, right?
Exactly.
So
how do you avoid that? Because,
well,
I mean, I've had people try to do that with me.
yes. The way that you avoid it is you find a fee-only financial planner. What that means is and you have the right to ask a financial planner, do you get commissions? If they say commissions, I would advise your readers not to hire them. You want a fee-based financial planner, which is that you pay them by the hour or by the session. So they're getting paid to help you. They're not getting paid by a financial company. And you are within your rights to ask, you know, do you receive commissions for your investments? How does your fee structure work, et cetera?
Right.
There is a new thing that's passed on Wall Street that is supposed to make this a little easier on consumers, but it's only recently been passed, and it's unclear whether it's going to remain in place. So, you know, just keep it simple. It's called a fee-only financial planner, a fee-based financial planner. What that means is, you know, if you you go to the dry cleaner, you get your clothes dry cleaned. You go to the financial planner, you pay them X dollars that you've agreed, and they do a certain amount of work for you. And when you start, you know, and you ask them, do you receive commissions for your if you do any investing, and you want them to say no. And if they don't say no, you should probably say, this isn't really the kind of planner I want.
Right.
And there is an organization. I'm going to look this up while we're talking if my computer turns on. But there is an organization that deals in fee-only financial planners, and I'm going to look it up for you. I think I know it, but I just want to make sure because I don't always write about this. Yeah, there is a group called the National – okay, hold on. I got to find it again. Hold on. Hold on.
Yeah, that's really
sorry,
important.
Guys.
It's really important.
Yeah, it's called,
it's called
the National Association of Personal – Financial advisors, and these are fee only financial advisors. So you might want to start there. NAPFA or the National Association of Fee Only Financial Advisors. And there's actually something on their website how to find an advisor.
Great. I'm going to post that on my web post because that's really important.
And
yeah,
I will email you the I'll email you the link, Mara. So there you have it.
Great.
So I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I think that's really important.
Yeah, it is because there have been a couple of times where people I've met through networking groups and things of that sort have said, hey, you know, why don't we have a discussion? I won't charge you anything about your retirement and see if I can help you. And then I realize that I'm meeting with them in a financial institution that they work for and, you know, any of those investing companies. And I'm thinking they're going to push me to invest in something that's going to make them money. They're not really looking out for my best interest.
Right, right, exactly. And, yeah, and this is basically a conflict of interest for you, right? So, yeah, so that you definitely want to avoid that. So,
yeah.
And this has got to be about you. And here's what I want you to tell me, you know, and even if your question is really general, I hope I can retire in 10 years. I'm really worried about it. You know, that it can be that general, right? It can be an expression of a general fear that you have, and they can help you narrow it down. Or you can have, I went in with mine. I had really specific questions. You know, I write about this stuff, but you can, however you need to approach it, but it needs to be about you. Definitely.
So in the few minutes that we have left, we're actually running out of time, but, you know, this has been a great conversation. Just, is there hope for people who are starting late?
Yes, absolutely. First of all, I'll talk about my experience. I was a really slow saver. I finally kind of kicked into gear, you know, in my mid-50s. Now, you know, I'm not going to make this really rosy. You know, when you're 50, you don't have as much time to save as when you're 21. So if there are any 21 or 25-year-olds out there, please go to your human resources, sign up for the 401k.
Right.
Okay. But,
right.
But if you're, you know, please do it. You will be so happy. You will thank Dr. Carpell and Kim when you get older. But it's just so much easier if you start early. But if you're older, you know, you can only save so much. You've got bills to pay, right? So there's only so much you can save in this short amount of time. If you're 55 and you were to retire when you're 67 or something, you know, how much can you save in 13 years? You may be able to answer that question now, you know, like, not very much times 13 years or something. So there's only so much you can do. But, you know, there are ways to figure out ways that you can save a little more money. The other thing is that, you know, people are working a lot longer now. And the longer you work, the less time you have to pay for your retirement. Or maybe you're going to work full-time and then you can transition to part-time is another option.
Mm-hmm.
My brother doesn't have a lot of money saved, but he's a construction worker, and he, you know, I don't know how much longer he's going to be able to do this full-time. So I was telling, you know, so I told him, once you're, I think it's 66, because he's a baby boomer, everybody's different, you can work as much as you want, and your Social Security is not taxed. I think it's either not taxed at all or only a very small part of it is taxed. I remember the rules.
Know
the Social Security rules. You've been working your whole life. You have all this money with your name on it at the Social Security Administration. Get to know the Social Security rules. You know, the later you file, the bigger your check is every month and the more money you have to pay your bills every month. Lots of ins and outs of how Social Security works. That you can actually figure out some ways to get more money coming in the door when you retire that way. So, I mean, we could talk a whole session on that, on Social Security, but
maybe you could come back and do that.
yeah, I'd love to do that.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. There are lots of interesting things about for women. If they're, you know, like I have a friend who was divorced and she'd been married to this man for over 10 years and she didn't, and then he died. She didn't realize she was going to get these benefits from him. And, you know, my aunt did the same thing. So there's just, you know, there's a lot to know about Social Security because it's money in the bank and you want to make sure you get the money out in the right way, that you maximize how much you can get out based on your needs and what you need. So, you know, so there are things you can do, and none of it is insanely complicated once you understand it, but there's nothing wrong with asking someone to help you out. So, and yes, there are definitely things you can do. I write about them quite a bit on the blog as well.
And so if listeners want to read your blog, how do they get to it?
Yes, so you can do one of two things. You could Google the name of the blog, Squared Away and Boston College, and you'll find it. I can tell you the URL for the blog is squaredawayblog.bc for Boston College.edu. So squaredawayblog.bc.edu. And
great.
Yeah, and you can, you know, you can, there's a search box, you can search Social Security, you can, you know, look up saving, that kind of thing. But I'm not a financial planner, and I also write about sort of the environment around retirement. So for your specific needs, you, you know, this is, my blog is a good way to get educated, but for what you specifically need, go find a financial planner who will let you pay them a fee to help them. No commissions.
Right, right. Great. Well, thank you so much, Kim, for coming on this evening. This was a really good discussion. I think it's really important. And,
yeah, well, thank you. And good for you for getting someone to help you with your finances. That's great. That's good to hear.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's good for everybody to do. I'm a big proponent of it now. So,
good.
And I'd love to have you come back and talk about Social Security. So we'll have to plan that.
Yes, I would love to do it. I'd be absolutely love to do it. So, all right, I probably won't talk to you. I hope you guys survive the summer down there.
Yeah, we will. I have been here several summers, so I'm sure I'll get through it. Enjoy beautiful summer in Boston.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. You have a good night.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, so we're going to take a brief break. We have lots more to come, so don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Carpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Carpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show. Please visit us on the web at www.drmaricarpel.com.
And we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Carpel and your golden years right here on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmaricarpel.com. And so before I go on to talk about the power of humor in dealing with stress, just to update you on the news. So Art is continuing to upload the YouTube videos of my interviews with some of the guests who have been on this program, and those are the guests who have been live in the studio, in the Austin studio, since the beginning of 2016. And he will continue to upload. Takes a long time to do this, so we're doing it real gradual and don't want to overwhelm everybody with a lot of videos. But there are some new ones uploaded, so if you go to my website, drmaricarpel.com, and click on videos, you'll see the latest ones. And if you check in every now and then, you'll see a new video. And it's kind of fun to see the interview. There were interviews that were done here live on the internet radio, but it's kind of fun to actually see it visually. What was happening in the studio, well, you know, and to actually see my guests. And also, if you're a regular listener, then you know that I'm a regular contributor to Arianna Huffington's online magazine, ThriveGlobal.com. And I've written several blogs right now to ThriveGlobal.com since it began in November, as well as Huffington Post for the last 2 years. So you can read my blogs that have been coming out monthly by going to my website, drmaricarpel.com, and click on publications or click on blogs. And those are the ways that you can read it. Or you can go directly to thriveglobal.com and Google and put a search in for my name, or go to huffingtonpost.com and put a search in for my name. And if you like me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Carpel, Your Golden Years, then you'll know when the next blog comes out as soon as it is published. And that next one should be sometime within this week. And my book is it's done, and it's on to the next phase to get it published, and hopefully will be out on the shelves within the next few months. So stay tuned, and if you follow me on Facebook, you'll get previews of the book and more information about when it's published and when it's ready for sale. And it's exciting, so I'll be releasing as much information as I can whenever I can, whenever I'm allowed to. And stay connected for more news. There's some more news coming your way that I think you'd be interested in. So just keep following on Facebook or listen here, and you'll find out. Humor. I've talked about this before, but I think it's a really important topic. Most people think of humor as something that's not very important, but it actually is extremely healing and beneficial for decreasing stress and also healing from even feelings of depression and physical illness. And if you've heard me talk about this before, I've talked about Norman Cousins, who was a journalist, and he had a very, very painful illness called ankylosing spondylitis, which at that time there were no medications for that and absolutely no cure. And he actually cured himself by watching funny movies. He would watch the reel-to-reel of Marx Brothers and I believe the Three Stooges. And he would just watch them for hours and let himself really, really laugh, like belly laugh, and to the point where he was crying. He was laughing so hard. And what he found was that for every 20 minutes of belly laughing, really, really intense laughter, he got 2 hours of pain-free sleep. And after a period of time, the pain completely went away. And when he went to the doctor, he discovered that he no longer had any signs of this illness, which was very unusual. And so at that point, doctors laid that you really can have an effect through laughter and humor. And he wrote a book about it. You can check that out, called Anatomy of an Illness. And there's actually a movie made about it with Ed Asner playing Norman Cousins. And so, you know, these days there's been so much going on in the news on a daily basis. We're bombarded with news. I've never seen so much news going on, and it's not all happy news, and a lot of it is pretty stressful. And I know for myself, in order to deal with the stress of what's going on in the world, and you know, I feel like it's important to keep up with what's going on in the world. I don't want to just ignore it. It's good to take breaks. I do recommend that, but it's also important to know what's happening, so that we can know what's happening, what could happen to our lives, but also so that we can actually do something if there are things that we can do to be part of the solution to any problems that are going on. But I have found for myself, between that and just a lot of changes going on in life in general, I mean, I read an article recently that the Earth's frequency has recently sped up to a rate that there's a vibration in the Earth that's natural, and it has sped up to a rate that scientists have not seen before. So it's interesting because I see things happening so quickly and changes happening so fast in my personal life and lives of people around me and in the world. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that was part of the reason. So I personally rely on watching late-night comedians and who are very politically oriented or news-oriented to kind of help me to process what's going on in the world, because they will take what's happening and turn it into – you know, turn it around in a way that you can see the absurdity in it. I don't think that they actually change any of it. There's so much going on that could be laughed at. It's so absurd. They don't have to do much, but they point out the absurdity. And I think I rely on that in order to help me to deal with it, because laughing at stressful events and looking at the absurdity is extremely beneficial in reducing our stress level around it. And does this make me feel happy about what's happening in the world, or does it make me become just a passive observer, no longer interested in doing my part in helping the world or helping people around me, whatever that may be? No, it doesn't. In fact, it gives me more energy and more creativity to do my part, because I don't feel as drained emotionally. I'm able to face it because I've laughed about it and reduced some of the stress. So in general, whatever you're dealing with in life, humor interferes with that downward spiral of energy zapping thoughts that we tend to get into when we're dealing with negative events or stressful events. By helping us to notice the absurdity of the situations that we may feel angry about or threatened by. And it creates positive emotions such as joy, amusement, hope. Hope is really important. When we can laugh at something, we can have more hope that the outcome will not be terrible. Confidence and overall well-being. And it, in the short term, it actually helps to stabilize our blood pressure, because a lot of times the stress can trigger high blood pressure. It massages our inner organs when we laugh and stimulates circulation, helps to improve digestion, and increases the supply of oxygen to the muscles, and as well as decreasing muscle tension. And in the longer term, when we laugh, the laughter boosts the power of our immune system by reducing damaging stress hormones. So the more we laugh at a stressful event, the less of those stress hormones we release, the cortisol, adrenaline, noradrenaline, we are less likely to have the stress reaction, that fight or flight reaction, if we can laugh. So some additional bonuses to humor and to laughter is that it enhances our creativity. It deepens our relationships. So if we laugh with other people, it helps to improve our communication with those people that we're laughing with and help us to feel closer with them. So, the people that we share a sense of humor with are people that we tend to be closer with. It takes away our tendency to overthink situations. When we laugh at it, it kind of short circuits that overthinking, the obsessive thinking. And laughter, the act of physically laughing, that belly laugh, detoxifies our body. So the scientists have found that the tears that we produce from laughter contains more toxins than the tears that we produce from sadness. And what that means is that we are detoxifying our body when we laugh, that those tears are taking toxins out of our body, while tears from sadness don't really detoxify us very much. And laughter, to that point where we're belly laughing, actually has some of the benefits of an aerobic workout. It works out our diaphragm. It increases our ability to use oxygen. And if we laugh long enough and often enough, it actually provides cardiac conditioning. Many people feel like they can't laugh because too many stressful things are going on and life is too difficult. But this is the time when we need to laugh the most when we're dealing with stress. It's at times like these that humor is really the most needed. It, for its power to brighten even the darkest situations. And you may have noticed that those comedians who we laugh at the hardest and who we find their jokes the funniest are those comedians who touch on those topics that are either taboo or we try not to deal with because they're so stressful. And when they make it into a joke, they lose their intensity, that we can laugh about it. So just in closing, because I think it's really important to get the benefits of laughter to help to reduce stress and to heal our sadness, I think it's really important to laugh every day. So how do we laugh every day, even if it's not something that we're used to doing or we're in the midst of stress? Laugh at yourself, you know, rather than criticizing yourself for mistakes. Laugh at yourself. Look for the comic absurdity of an obstacle that you're running into. Look, you know, blow it up in your mind to the point where it is absolutely absurd and laugh about it. And then, you know, sometimes distraction is okay and it helps us. So watch a funny video or read a funny book or share a funny story with friends. And one other way of getting ourselves to laugh when we don't feel like laughing, I've talked about this before, is by watching other people laugh or listening to other people laugh. Laughter is contagious. So, you know, there are apps, believe it or not, on your smartphone with different people laughing, all different kinds of laughs. So check those out. Some of them are free, and find the one that tickles your funny bone the most and gets you to start laughing. And then just make it like a meditation every day. Spend time laughing. So on that note, we're going to take a brief break. We're going to listen to the music of our next guest. And when we come back, I will have Paul Klemperer on the phone from right here in Austin, jazz saxophonist, talking about his music. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Of road, we're gonna take it to the end and turn around and do it again. Saddle up and settle in, leave your worries on the wind. Saddle up and settle in, leave your worries on the wind. We're gonna get there in the end on I-10.
we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel in your golden years right here on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmarakarpel.com. And now we were just listening to the music of our guest who is joining us on the phone right now, jazz saxophone player Paul Klimperer. Good evening,
Hi,
Paul.
Hi, Dr. Mara. Hi, Dr. Mara.
How are you?
Can you hear me?
I'm good. Just a reminder, there's a slight delay when we talk like this. So
we'll proceed accordingly.
Okay. So I understand you're having a barbecue, and it's starting to thunder. Are you still having it?
Yeah. Well, I liked your last segment about you have to laugh, because I got this party all together, and the clouds are – I was like, it's getting dark awful early. And so we may be on the inside. Instead of on the cookout, we may be just sitting inside listening to the rain. But we'll have fun one way or another.
Okay. All right. Well, we're planning to head over there after the show. So.
Oh, good. Well, well, hopefully the coals won't be wet. There'll be plenty to drink anyway.
Right.
And this is the reason I'm having the party is it's kind of my last chance to get together with friends before the summer gets busy, because I'm going to be heading out of town in June and won't be back till September.
So what are you going to be doing?
Mostly I'll be up in the Northeast. My parents, I think I've told you, they live in the Boston area. And I'm trying to spend more and more time with them. They've gotten up there. And so time is precious.
Yeah,
I want to spend it with them. So I've been organizing shows up in New England, playing, and I've got some recording projects to do through the summer. And I also just like to set up house concerts, and my folks enjoy that. We use their house for house concerts, and I've got musicians
nice.
Up there. Yeah, it's nice, and so they get. And so I can't take them out to the clubs as often as I used to, so we'll bring the musicians to them instead. And
Very nice.
Yeah.
So,
and my theme this summer is Austin to Boston, because I'm going to spend a lot of time up there and playing more shows around the Boston area. And so I'm bringing the music I've been working on down here in Austin over the years, bringing it up there to share it.
Well, you know, the guest that I had on earlier, she's in Boston. So I'll have to, she's at the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. So
very interesting.
I'll have to spend, so are you, do you have a calendar on your Facebook page or website?
Yeah, everything. My Facebook, Paul Klimperer Music, and then my website, which is pksax.com.
Okay.
And so all the listings, got several shows in Central Square, Cambridge, and just around the metropolitan Boston area. And it's funny you should say that about your guest, because the other aspect of my summer is I'm trying to do more projects that relate to aging, and specifically because I'm spending so much time with my folks, and we're, you know, trying to do things to keep them active. Both with music, but also just doing family history projects. I try to tape record them as much as possible when they're reminiscing, and they'll they'll say stuffing. It's great. And my as part of a longer term project to do kind of creative cultural issues that address the problem of senior citizens and all of us as we get older being marginalized, considered, you know, not as useful to society as we get older, to sort of push back against that and look at how experience and knowledge and just all the things we've lived through add value to our lives and our and can contribute to other people's lives. So just for example, I'll get some family history thing going, and my mother will say something that I didn't even know existed, some Depression era tidbit, you know, and then I'll go on Google and go, yep, she's right. Last summer she told me about they used to read by some kind of thing called a mantle, and it was like a kind of a lampshade made with some toxic chemical that when you put a candle inside it would light up like magnesium or something, and it would like light up really bright, like hurt your eyes that bright, and they would read to that when they didn't have electricity. And, you know, and I would never have known that. So that's just a little tidbit. Like, so I'm trying to take that stuff and connect it to the music. And they always add more content to the songs that I grew up playing, all the old jazz tunes. They'll tell me stories mm-hmm. about it, you know, going mm-hmm. to see Sidney Bechet play or Benny Goodman or something. And so those kind of like oral history things, I'm trying to weave that into my music projects and connect mm-hmm. it to this idea mm-hmm. that we get – our lives get more valuable as we get older, not less valuable.
So, yeah.
But we have to fight for it tooth and nail, you know. Can you hear the thunder?
Yeah. Well, that's what my show is about, so that's perfect.
Yeah.
And that's what my book is about. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you do great work on that.
Well, thank you.
And I appreciate you, you know, like having artists like me on to sort of talk about our project because it's all very much connected.
Yeah. So speaking of your project, the song that we just played, was that, I think that was I-10?
Yeah, one of mine.
Is that a recent one?
Well, it's not recent. It was kind of the end of an era. I wrote it as I was finishing up working with Marcia Ball. I had been touring with her in the 1990s. And it's just about the actual highway I-10 that we take back and mm-hmm. forth because a lot of the gigs are on that route and sort of connecting us to the whole, you know, blues tradition and the touring music tradition. So it's one that I play in rotation and sort of like I'm talking about the Austin to Boston, bringing that, you know, Texas blues and the experience of touring in the South, bringing that up and sharing that with folks in New England. So
uh-huh.
that's why I gave you that song. Just that's going to be one that I play this summer for folks.
Okay. So you sent us three songs. So we're going to play another one right now. I think
all
it's
right.
Make It All Right. So
yeah,
before we play that,
mm-hmm.
yeah, can you talk about it?
Oh yeah, that's another one I wrote, and it's yeah along the same lines. It's a kind of just a funky blues that. The sound is very much of the Austin R&B blues scene, which part of what I found attractive when I moved here was that there's much more of a kind of cross-pollination between country, blues, soul, jazz. A lot of the musicians play in all these genres, but they cross over. And so you can hear elements, you know, in a song that you might call it a blues song or a funk song, but you can hear all these different elements in it. So that's kind
mm-hmm.
of, that song kind of represents that. It's like a little
okay.
of everything in it.
Okay. So don't go anywhere. We're just going to play
right.
a little bit of that and then we'll come back.
Okay.
Thank you.
Paul Klemperer. It makes it all right. So,
yeah.
So, Paul, you have several CDs out by now, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I've got, I think, six now. And in some ways, they are, you know, when you do a CD, you do a recording, it's just kind of like a marker of where you're at in that moment in time. And you make it, and then you keep growing and moving on. But in other ways, because these are, a lot of it's original music, it's stuff that I record, but I incorporate it into my shows, so I keep playing the material, and it grows, but it's also becomes kind of part of who you are. So that all those tracks that I gave you for today are from my Manteca Beat CD, and they represent the kind of more roots side of my music.
Uh-huh.
And then the other CDs, I have more world music and more straight-ahead jazz and some more pop-oriented stuff. But they're all part of what I do and just depends on the audience I'm in front of. I guess I'm kind of returning to the Manteca Beat sound because it seems – my philosophy with that is that it incorporates elements from classic American music, 1940s through 60s, which a lot of people think of as just kind of like American music, but it's really world music in that all these sounds have come through immigrant communities coming to the U.S. and Africa, Latin America, Middle East, and it's all there in American music, you know, going way back to the, you know, beginnings of popular music in America. So I'm kind of pushing that, especially the kind of time we're in right now. I think it's good to remind people. You know, when we say we're a nation of immigrants, that's you hear it in the music, and,
right.
And like, so when I play the music, I want to point out like, hey, this song came from some guy from Hungary who ended up in Hollywood and he wrote this song, or you know,
uh-huh.
or this groove came from West Africa and ended up in New Orleans, and to like bring that out, even though it's very much like roots music of America, that's kind of the philosophy in Manteca Beat. The melting pot.
So are your CDs are downloadable music? Is that all available on your website?
Yep, all the links there, pksax.com. I have most of my CDs are on CD Baby, so you can get them there. Or you can, you know, write to me and I'll mail them to you. And they're in the CD Baby and other online stores. They network with Amazon and iTunes, so it's like if you go to one, you can find it anywhere. If you want to download a track or buy the physical CD, it's all
right
on the internet
right
now. So, but it's,
okay.
If you go to my website, you can get all the links there.
Okay. So do you have any shows left in Austin before you leave for Boston?
Oh, yeah. This is going to be a big month up, and I'm leaving about the 25th of June, and I do a residency at the Skylark Lounge. Wanted to give a shout out to them. That's in my neighborhood, sort of East Central. And it's a great club, and I've been playing there since it opened about 4 years ago. But I've been doing a weekly jazz residency every Wednesday, and it'll be 2 years in September. And it's pretty cool. They give me free rein, and I just do a different theme each week. And it's also kind of what I'm trying to do with the music. It's like entertain and educate, but you know, I don't want to hurt anybody's brain while they're drinking, you know, but I try to give them a little information. So each week it's a slightly different theme, and we'll show how jazz is such an expansive umbrella term that it includes so much music. So I can go, you know, all over, do world music. I can do classic Dixieland. I can do gypsy jazz, Latin jazz. So we go all over the map, and it's a lot of fun. And the owners have been very supportive, and John and Mary Latouf, and I'm happy they're pushing it. And the club seems to be doing good. So, you know, it's like playing jazz is always a risk if you want to make money.
But
we got a good community support, so I'm having a good time doing that. So that's the main thing, is like keeping that going. And then I'll have guest artists while I'm gone, but then we'll keep the music going every Wednesday. And then just a bunch of different stuff that comes up each week. I played at several retirement homes regularly, and that's always fun. Yeah, and that's again this idea of trying to connect the music projects with the valuable experiences as you get older. So I'm actually trying to interview people as I play for them and get their feedback, and you know, play the requests or just listen to their stories. And as you know, music and memory are very connected, deeply connected. And so a lot of the clients there, they won't do much talking, but once we start playing music for them, they get very talkative and start sharing these stories that are, they're stored in their hard drive. They may not have access to that hard drive really often, but we get the music going. And so I want to start documenting that more, like all the stories that they can share and how the music, what the music means to them. So I've been doing, it's interesting too, because that's a growing demographic, you know, the aging baby boomers. And so there are more and more gigs for musicians playing for, you know, the 55 to 95 demographic.
So are your local shows, I would imagine, are on your website as well, on your calendar?
Yeah, I try to keep everything. I got a good assistant who's helping me and getting my team together to, you know, to keep all that going, keep the social media current, keep the website current. So between pksax.com and the Facebook, Paul Klemperer and Music, you can pretty much see what I'm doing. And I've been fortunate to actually, the other thing I've been trying to work on for years now is do more writing, both essays, educational types of writing, but also fiction and more creative writing.
Oh, cool.
And so I've been doing more of that. So I'll be showing the links on the website for that too. Got some cool stuff. Yeah, it was actually just part of a book project, and it just got published on music pedagogy for the 21st century, and it just came out on Oxford University Press.
Awesome.
And I contributed a chapter. So I'll be bragging about that on my website.
Yeah.
It'll be in the educational section of your bookstore.
Okay. Great. And I'll post your links on my web post about the show later tonight. Yeah.
Right.
So before we go, we have to wrap up so we can make it over to your house. But as we go off the air, we're going to play the third song that you sent us. So before you and I stop talking, if you can just give us a little brief synopsis of that.
Oh, yeah.
Silver Bird.
Silver Bird. Yeah, and that's kind of more in the pop direction. It's you know, it's a song about, you know, losing the one you love and you got to go on.
Okay.
Makes life hard, but universal. Makes life hard, but it's good material for songwriting.
Right.
And so that's and so it's and I would just say I had a guest artist on this record, and I had this great singer Malford Milligan who's singing the lead on this. He's a wonderful singer here in Austin, and so and it's kind of the gentler side of, he's got a huge voice, and this is the gentler side of Malford.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, we're gonna play that as we go off the air.
All right.
After I let everybody know what's happening next week. But meanwhile, thank you so much for coming on the program again. And look forward to seeing you in a little while.
Let the festivities begin.
And you'll have to come back, you know, after the summer sometime to tell us how everything went in Boston.
Okay. It's a deal.
All right.
All right.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye. All right. So before Art knocks us off the air, let me tell you what's happening next week. We'll be back next Sunday, June the 4th, on another great program. Yoga teacher Steve Kane will join us once again from Westchester, New York. And this time, Steve will talk about the psychology and physiology of yoga. He's talked about a lot of topics related to yoga, but we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of the psychology and physiology of it. And if you like the music from the crooners era, Brett Marshall will be talking about his music, and we'll be playing some of his crooning music. And he'll be talking about his upcoming performances on South Padre Island. And also Laura Galazunas will record in from the retirement paradise, Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. And we'll have more as well. So be sure to tune in. And if you want to hear tonight's program again and read the information from this show, get the website links that my guests spoke about on the show, or listen to previous shows, find out what's happening in future shows, read my blog, it's all at my website, drmarakarpel.com, drmarakarpel.com. And also be sure to follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Karpel, Your Golden Years. And you can listen to this evening's program in as soon as 5 minutes from now by going directly to Blog Talk Radio, that's blogtalkradio.com/yourgoldenyears. This evening's program was produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Psyched Up Productions, and sponsored by neurologist and memory specialist Dr. Ronald DeVere, and by Storyhouse. And special thanks to my guests, Kimberly Blanton, Paul Klemperer, and of course, thank you, Art, and thank you all for listening. Have a peaceful night and inspiring week. And remember, youth has no age. Good night, everyone, and have a wonderful, peaceful morning.
Guidance offered by Dr. Karpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Karpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.